myself in paper. I'm gonna dab myself with glue. Stick some stems on the top of my head. I'm gonna mail myself to you.
I'm gonna tie me up in red string. I'm gonna tie blue ribbons too. I'm gonna climb up in my mailbox. I'm gonna mail myself to you.
I'm gonna mail myself in paper. I'm gonna dab myself with glue. Stick some stems on the top of my head. I'm gonna mail myself to you. When you see me in your mailbox, cut the string and let me out. Wash the glue off my fingers. Stick some bubble gum in my mouth. I'm gonna wrap myself in paper. I'm gonna dab myself with glue. Stick some stamps on the top of my head. I'm gonna mail myself to you.
Morning. Like this?
No.
You have disoriented me with this setup. I'm easily disoriented. Good morning. Welcome to Prairie Unitarian Universalist Society. We have a very special program this morning. I believe you do this yearly, but it's new to me, so I'm looking forward to it. And as always, we welcome everyone of whatever theological persuasions as we are building a community here, and we work on it hard, and we do a very good job, and you are welcome into it. And we do different services on Sunday mornings, so if you are new or this is one of your first times, please come back and visit us again. As I said this morning, Rose Smith will be doing the service. Sometimes I do the service. I am the Reverend Sandy Ingham. Sandy's fine. Sometimes we have people from out of the community. In a little bit, we'll ask any visitors or guests or first time, second time, third time people if they want to stand up and introduce themselves to do that. In the meantime, I believe I have some announcements. Talk to Barb.
Janet.
Oh, other Barb. Well, not other Barb, but not Barb. Yes, thank you. After the service for cupcakes.
Ooh.
Or, I didn't finish the sentence yet. You might have to do something to get these. Or fresh fruit for those who sign up for hospitality committee. Maybe sign you up for the committee then. That was you. Okay, we got very young ones.
All right.
I can clear tables, I
think. Yes.
Uh-huh. We also really need before service coffee maker. Yes, we do. And Barb or someone will certainly give directions. What we're doing. Oh, that's why I said, or someone.
Maybe the other Barb.
Can you start training quick?
Well, I've been in enough congregations to know that there are plenty of people who would be willing to do it, but they're afraid of making, myself included, coffee in the big coffee maker. So
it's easy.
You can have a little training. We might find some people who are willing to do it. This is an announcement from Rose. The Smiths, I guess it's from Galen and Rose, will have a garage sale next Friday and Saturday from 9 to 5 each day. That's the 19th and 20th of July at 218 DuRose Terrace. Art, lots of art, pictures, posters, pottery, baskets, household items too, and many other things, I am sure. Any help getting ready before then. Great, will be certainly greatly appreciated. C, or call Rose. Rose is in our directory. And one more from Dirk. Visit the house next door after the service. It's open, and the men's group will be working on Monday evening at 6 p.m. in the house. Thank you. And for Monday, especially between the hours of 6 and on, everyone is considered part of the men's group. There we go.
The women.
Yes, definitely. And thank you to all those of you who have been working really hard already on it. Rose.
Okay. I traveled the world twice over, met the famous saints and sinners, poets and artists, kings and queens, old stars and hopeful beginners. I've been where no one's been before. I learned secrets from writers and cooks, all with one library ticket to the wonderful world of books. Yes. And now we'll do I Love to Tell the Story.
People and the world.
Susan, would you like to tell us, please?
Books are masters who instruct us without rods or ferules, without words or anger, without bread or money. If you approach them, they are not asleep. If you seek them, they do not hide. If you blunder, they do not scold. If you are ignorant, they do not laugh at you. But Richard DeVere. Now we'll have a moment of silent meditation.
This was an idea that I had because I knew how much Dee loved Handel operas, and I thought it would be cool to bring the best young singers in America here to sing for him. And I have to say that it was really exciting to watch him during the concert, how much he enjoyed it, and how much other people seemed to like it too. So 399 other people also got to know this.
Orange, could you repeat the baby's name?
Linnea Sophia Zeno.
Let's see, my name's Barbara Park, and I just wanted to tell you that I'm having a big surgery on Friday, so I'll be out of commission for sort of 6 weeks or so, although I'm sure I'll be back before that time, but my duties as president will sort of be from home for a little while.
We were gone last week for the wedding of our youngest daughter, Winifred's third son, Benjamin. A very happy wedding that took place in West Chicago. And as always, weddings are great opportunities for seeing other members of the family. Not everybody, but some. And then I have two younger daughters who I hope are going to wait a little while before they get married. In high school and high school.
Some of you remember I had a mouse in my house and I had been through that mouse. I have another that can fit in my piano.
Oh, oh no!
I heard the string that's from the strings by accident.
Oh, no.
I don't know how I'm
going to
get a mouse.
Play real loud. Yeah.
It's Wednesday. My daughter from California is coming for a week, which will be terrific, and we're going for 2 days to the Sheboygan area for our Lake Michigan fix.
I just wanted to let people know Gary survived his surgery Friday.
Okay.
He has a partial knee replacement. And he's coming home today, so. He looked good after the surgery, and the surgeon was very happy about the way it went. He didn't do so well yesterday, but hopefully today he's going to do well.
Hi, we're returning to this town in Cheryl Robinson. We've been traveling around, but we're planning on taking a little apartment now and staying up here in the forest, so we will be back as members.
Great.
And the part of it is, I was getting a cancer diagnosis in May, but I'm dealing with that and doing really well. And so just want to get that over with. But the good news is we have our very first grandchild, Tanya Cherry Sinnott, and she's only 2 weeks old.
Ooh.
And I would say she's the most beautiful.
I would like to, I'm Anna Urbanski, if you don't know me, and I would like to thank everybody from Prairie, the people who came and helped me celebrate my birthday on Friday, which would be Bar Park and Rick Recking, and Aaron Bosch and his husband, and Marty Duffin sitting next to me, and about the same number of people from my office came, and somebody I knew from Facebook, so it was fun. And I love to sing, and we had a lot of fun, so maybe we'll do this again. I'm lighting one candle for all that has been said, since I didn't light them as we went along. Two more. And also, of course, as always, one for those joys and concerns and sorrows that are unspoken. Maybe this is why I didn't do it. Okay. I ask that you keep all joys and sorrows and concerns in your hearts and minds for the coming week. Oh, I think we already did the guests and visitors. Thank you. Oh, but we may have missed someone. Is there anyone else who is new or here for the first time? And welcome to you. I look forward to getting to know you.
Welcome to Summer Reads.
We have a new member to welcome.
Oh.
So, could I ask Kent to come up here? As you know, our membership committee, meaning Dan Proud, puts together these cute little baskets that have some chocolate in them, some other goodies, but the most important thing, of course, is the official membership tag, no longer that stick-on stuff, but
yes,
something a little more official to go on the board to say you're really one of us now. And so, as is my habit, I would like you to help me welcome him with a song. Can we do Consider Yourself
at Home? Consider yourself part of the family. We've taken to you so strong. It's clear we're going to get along.
So I would also like to give you the opportunity to say a few words. I'm going to give you the microphone, and just so we get to hear your voice, and you can, I don't know, tell us about your job or how you found Prairie or whatever you want to say. We just want to hear your voice.
All right, well, my voice is probably a little hoarse because I've had a cold all week this week. But, let's see once. Well, how I found Prairie is I was recommended. I actually, 5 years ago or something, I had gone to First Unitarian a few times and kind of didn't quite connect there. And then a friend of mine recommended Prairie a year or two ago. And
tell us your friend.
Who after my trip, I started coming here. And eventually, you know, I guess in a way it's a tribute because I'm not like a huge joiner of stuff. So the fact that I decided to join Prairie is probably kind of a good indication or a good reflection on the people here. So the little stick-on tags don't stick to this jersey very well, so now I can not be anonymous, I guess.
So who's the friend we get to thank for you?
Cinda Lamar.
Okay. Remember to thank. Okay.
So, and I do computer programming at the UW, and I guess as probably most of you know, when I'm not working, I'm usually trying to ride my bike somewhere. So, and so that's think about coming along in 2 years. So.
Welcome.
Okay, now this is a participatory program. So everyone who would like to share a book with us has an opportunity to do so. And we urge you, if you don't already have an index card, Susan or Dirk will give you one, to jot down your the name of your, the title of your book, and Dirk has my example of how to do it. So there it is.
So read that for us.
Well, I am going to
here,
use, use my prerogative to tell you about a wonderful book that I have on my shelf that I decided to reread. It's called The Illustrated Cider with Rosie, and it's by Lori Lee. And I have a copy with me. And I suggest that when you write down your information about your book, you indicate whether it's a fiction or nonfiction. So NF for nonfiction and F for fiction. The title, the author, the date, and the other, if you want to put the publisher and so on, that's up to you. And also include your name, the recommended by so-and-so. So that's how to do that. And I'll take a prerogative and share this wonderful book with you. This is the illustrated Cider with Rosie. It's also available in a non-illustrated form. Now, I am not a boy, but I tell you that I realized what it's like for this boy living in the early 1900s in a tiny village in the Cotswolds in England. He was brought up with five sisters and two other brothers, and a household with a rather distracted mother and no father. The father vanished and sent money now and again. So they were rather a poor family, but this little boy was very, very keen to do everything that he could to live life in that village with his buddies and his family and his wonderful mother. And the reason it's called Cider with Rosie is because toward the end of the book, he takes his first bite of the apple with Rosie Burdock and never forgot it. So I recommend this marvelous book to you. It's really a joy to read. And now for you, to share the books that you like, please do. And Susan has the microphone. So who wants to start? Somebody's got to start.
I recently read Strange Fits of Passion by Anita Shreve. It is fiction. And if any of you ever have read Anita Shreve, she is a wonderful writer. But don't expect happy endings for her books. The quote, Strange Fits of Passion, comes from a poem from William Wordsworth. That was how the title went. Someone saw me reading the book and they go, ooh, that's probably a very racy novel. No? One of the things that I loved about this book is that I'm from New England, and how it profiled the people living in Maine on the coast in a small fishing village was just incredible, including the accents, their small town mentality, and Barb and Kathy Converse and other people have probably been to Maine, and it is really different. It is a different culture, and it's fascinating. For me, it was a little bit of a memory thing from visiting there. But if you've never visited there, it's just amazing. And I think the town and the characters were part, I mean, they were all a character. The people in the town and that culture was really a big part of the book too. So it is about a woman who left her husband because he was beating her, and how she hid out and how the town helped her hide out and also kind of didn't help her hide out because of their culture. And it's just very engrossing, and I don't know, you just feel like you've really read some, you really read something of substance with a lot of things to think about in your own life. I really don't know what else to say about the book other than I just looked it up because I was trying to find a date and a year and all that stuff, which I don't know that rules. So I just looked it up on my phone, and Amazon had it with just one half of one star left to be at the top of their rating system. So I think that was 4.5 or maybe 5.5, I don't know, whatever it is. So I think it's a good summary where, you know, you're not maybe learning some gigantic new thing, but very good for contemplating it and being removed from your own world for a while and getting into this world.
What is the title again?
Strange Fits of Passion by Anita Shreve.
But we will get this list over now.
Yes.
So we don't have all the books. It's one of the best things about this service.
Yeah.
Right now I'm reading a book called Gulp by Mary Roach, which is about digestion, and I'm only a little way into it, but so far it's got lots of cocktail party conversation tips in it. why people with cancer can starve to death because the importance of taste. But anyway, the book I wanted to recommend today is called A Tale for the Time Being by Ruth Ozeki. And the reason I bring it up today is that it's going to be the Go Big Read book on the UW campus this fall, which means that every incoming freshman gets a copy. And the Mass Public Library is doing it as the All City Read. It's a novel that takes place both in Japan and in Vancouver. And one of the reasons that they chose it is that it talks about bullying, which is, of course, a very hot topic. But the interesting thing is that the part that takes place in Vancouver is through the eyes of a Japanese-American author living on an island in the Vancouver area who is involved in Zen Buddhism. And she finds a message from a young girl in Japan, and so it's back and forth between the two stories. But the other reason I wanted to bring it up today is that I don't normally read all the acknowledgments in a book, but when you don't have enough to read, I happened to be out at American Players Theater doing the interviews for the ABT Talkbacks to Go, and we had a 2-hour gap, and I finished the book out there, so I was reading the acknowledgments, and darned if my best friend from high school wasn't in the acknowledgments. She is a Zen monk living in Vancouver, and she actually took Ruth Ozeki to Japan on a guided tour, so they've known each other for years, and she helped read the book before it was finished, so I was just tickled to see that. And if your book club wants to read the book, the Madison Public Library will have kits for book clubs with a whole set of books and some discussion questions, so you don't have to each individually request them. So it's a very interesting book. It's going to make for some great conversations. It's not a simple book. Between the parts in Japan about bullying and about reality and about family and about Buddhism, and it's a very intriguing book, and I hope you enjoy it. A Tale for the Time Being.
My book is The Horse Whisperer, a novel by Nicholas Evans. It's not just a horse story, but a story of a human tragedy and recovery from that tragedy.
And they changed the movie.
My book is In the Garden of Beasts. It's by Eric Larson, and it's a real page-turner. It's a beautiful thriller. And it tells the story of Ambassador Dodd and his family who were in Berlin from 1933 to 1938. And Dodd was picked by Roosevelt, but he was the fourth or fifth pick. And he was an academic, and he didn't have the credentials that a lot of people in the State Department thought he should have. He wasn't from Harvard, Yale, and so on. And he was a very plain living man.
He brought his Chevrolet over in the midst of all the Mercedes and embassies and so on. And it's his gradual realization of what was going on in Germany. It's kind of an innocence abroad, gradually realizing the grip that the Nazi Party was having upon Germany and the violence and so on. And he brought along his very sexually charged daughter, who was recovering from a marriage. And she was involved with high Nazi officials and also a Soviet diplomat. Anyway, it's a fascinating tale, and his problems with the State Department, isolationists, anti-Semitic, many of them, and they were interested in having Germany just pay back their debts. And so it's a fascinating book.
Fiction or not?
Non-fiction.
I have one that's nonfiction as well. A lot of you know that I've given talks on Margaret Fuller, and so I've read several biographies. And I also gave a talk about the Peabody Sisters. There was a wonderful book about them. So the woman who wrote the Peabody Sisters has now written a biography of Margaret Fuller. It just came out this year. It's called Margaret Fuller, A New American Life. And although there have been some exhaustive books before, I think she does a fabulous job of making her and the other folks around her, like Emerson, into real flesh and blood people, which is not easy when you read their writings are so formal and complex to figure out sometimes. And then I think she does a great job of showing us Margaret was way ahead of her time in many ways, but also how she, over and over, she just throw her heart out there only to have it dropped or thrown back at her. And something about her actual life. So this is brand new. I definitely recommend it. Yes. Megan Marshall is the author.
I brought a book on ants.
I was amazed to find it. It was at a time when I was having an ant problem in my garden.
Speaking of life,
the plants are actually being killed by the ants in one spot in my garden. Mm-hmm. And so I tried sprinkling red pepper, and the ants covered it up. And then they did it again because I sprayed them twice. Well, they finally quit. But anyway, because of that problem, I found this book and thought, this is just what I want to read in case there's some kind of answer in here. And this man, there's a picture here on the back of him. He's a real outdoorsman. He fell in love with ants when he was about five or so. And then he found out that people studied things like that as he was growing up. He decided that's what he wanted to study. And so he's a tremendous expert. And he took a trip all around the world studying the ants of different countries and the different kinds of ants. And this book is just full of the most amazing things. They do so much more than we know. The ants that we know here, I always thought there was a queen and workers and soldiers. I didn't know there were other kinds of ants. And he found ants that had giant ants that would transport the little ants to go do battle or to bring back food. And I was watching, as I was gardening, I was watching an ant doing something with a caterpillar while I was working on the ground. And sure enough, it was doing exactly what was talked about in the book. So this ant was dragging this little caterpillar, and because they only have legs on the front part of their body, he couldn't do anything to hang on anything. And the ant finally got him across loose soil and into grass. And I thought, now there's a chance this caterpillar will save himself. And sure enough, he did. He connected two pieces of grass with his front little leg. Well, the ant gave up and went over to find some reinforcements. Meanwhile, the caterpillar found a piece of grass. So I thought, he's worked hard. I'm going to put him aside. So this is just amazing. I want to show you pictures. Because they're terrific photography. He's won awards in photography because of the detail. This is a kind of ant called weaver ants. Mm-hmm. These are a string of ants holding onto each other to bridge a gap. Mm-hmm. And once they get it across, then they build more. This said on here that usually they're about 6 inches ants thick. Mm-hmm. This is a single string of ants. Holding onto each other. Are they not tools? And then there was another here. These are leaf cutter ants. The leaf cutter ants take the leaves to their nest and they bring in fungi, a certain kind of fungi, and they grow it there.
So they are the originators of agriculture. They're originators of quite a few things. It's a fascinating book. It's a lot of reading. Small print, big pages, but very interesting. So I recommend it.
The author of the book I'm recommending is a Wisconsinite. He's attended UW-Platteville and got a degree in Spanish and teaches at high school in Beaver Dam and has married and has two kids. Typical Wisconsinite, right? Less than 10 years ago, he was walking across Rwanda. His name is Francois Muzamera. He was trying to escape the genocide, and that's the title of his book, Surviving the Genocide. And it's not the best written book in the world, but it's full of much feeling, gives much information, and he talks about his encounters with American culture and some of the funny things that happen with that. So it's and we're reading it for the book group, which we'll be discussing it on July 21st. And it's a short book, and I do have copies. So if anybody's interested, I can get you a copy. Also, he might be interested in coming to speak here if we're interested.
Since we're talking about summer reads, I'll mention one of my favorite novels that I just reread this summer, which is Rabbit at Rest by John Updike. Probably some of you have read it. It's the fourth in Updike's famous series of rabbit books about the life of Harry Rabbit Angstrom from a fictional town in Pennsylvania. It's a wonderful book. It starts out ominously with Harry and his wife Janice at a small airport in Florida, South Florida, waiting for the arrival of their son and daughter-in-law and grandchildren. And Harry looks at the approaching airplanes and perceives that it's his approaching death, which may or may not occur by the end of the novel. But it's a wonderful read. I'm sure some of you have read it, and I thoroughly enjoyed it. And I'm sure this is in bad taste, but I'll also recommend my own book. It's a good summer read, which is called 10 Nobodies and Their Somebodies, which some of you have read, which is consists of 10 first-person narrative chapters about quote-unquote fictional nobodies who work for or otherwise serve famous people throughout history, including William Shakespeare, Anne Bonny, Davy Crockett, General Custer, Lewis Carroll, President William Howard Taft, Gertrude Stein and Alice B. Toklas, Marilyn Monroe, Vince Lombardi, and Meyer Lansky.
Wow.
How many people know who Meyer Lansky was? Famous Jewish gangster in the 20th century. So,
will the person who has quote number one read it?
Some books are to be tasted.
Okay. Some books are to be tasted. Some books are to be tasted, others to be swallowed, and some few to be chewed and digested. That is, some books are to be read only in parts, others to be read but not seriously. Others to be read wholly and with diligence and attention. And this was written in 1625 by Francis Bacon.
A book I absolutely loved, and I sent two copies to two of my children for birthday presents. Anyway, the name of it is Things Fall Apart by Chinua Achebe, a Nigerian writer. And I want to tell you how it was written. He just wrote it because he loved writing and he could not stop. But when it was finished, he had no idea what to do with it. So his friends told him he should send it to London and have it published. So he sent your manuscript to London to have it published, and this was the only copy he had. And he didn't know what to say or do, so it just sat on your desk for a long time. It ended up winning the Nobel Prize. But the content of the book is his description of what a village life is like in Africa. And this is what I was reading first, and I thought was fascinating. Just sort of seeing how things really went there. And the title is Things Fall Apart. And the first part is describing the life. The second part is describing what happens when the missionaries come. And that's when the title comes, Things Fall Apart. And it ends tragically. It's a quite powerful novel, I thought. Things Fall Apart. I want you all to rush out.
I'm recommending the histories of Eduardo Galeano, Memories of Fire. This May, I was listening to Ward Radio, and in the background I heard him say that Eduardo Galeano was going to be on campus and speaking that night. And I thought, wow, where? You know? So I called Ward. And they didn't have any record of anybody saying that. And so, anyway, I looked on Today in the Union and I found that indeed he was going to be speaking, and so I raced down there to see him because I thought, when am I ever going to see one of my favorite authors in person? And this gentleman is a journalist, writer, socialist, historian, who says that the most important thing he does is remember. And that we've all forgotten our histories. And he talks and he writes about in vignettes of what history is, and then you can draw your own conclusions from that. He's a socialist who was targeted for death by the Argentinian military when he lived in Argentina and had to evacuate that country at speed. The books are called Memories of Fire, and if you start, it's a trilogy, you can read any one of them. I recommend that one to begin with, and I'm sure you'll finish it. And I'm going to read an excerpt from his latest book, which is Children of the Days, which is an almanac of vignettes. And he writes a lot about soccer, too, which is what today's almanac reading is. So I've chosen another one, which is more indicative of what's in Memories of Fire. The Mosquito Maniac. In 1881, Cuban physician Carlos Finlay demonstrated that yellow fever, also known as black vomit, was transmitted by a certain female mosquito. At the same time, he unveiled a vaccine that would eradicate the disease. Carlos, known in the neighborhood as the Mosquito Maniac, spoke of his discovery before the Academy of Medical, Physical, and Natural Sciences in Havana. It took 20 years for the rest of the world to find out. During those 20 years, while prestigious scientists in prestigious places followed false leads, yellow fever continued in its deadly ways.
I apologize that I only thought of my book. I'm way over, so I don't have the author, but I will communicate. It's the President's Club, and perhaps some of you have read it. This is a fascinating book recently put out about what happens to presidents when they are no longer presidents, and how do they relate to their successors. And it was really surprising and amazing to me how many of these ex-presidents became truly friendly and helpful companions to their successors, whether they were of the same or opposite party and policies. I think there was something about the personal awareness that a president has an experience that no one else has. And they want to share that with their successors. And this is often very private. It isn't done for the sake of publicity. They're true companions. For instance, would you have imagined that Hoover was a companion to FDR? See, these things happened when I was growing up, so that's why it's all the more interesting to me. The President's Club And there were a few examples of some rather snide and unproductive relationships. But I thought the majority were very helpful and companionable.
That's why Nancy gives.
Well, thank you. That's all right. All right. Nancy Gitt.
Well, I want to recommend a book that probably most of you have read already. It's called Snow Falling on Cedars. It's almost 20 years old now. But I never read it when it came out, and it is just beautiful. Has anyone not read it? Do you want to read it? Okay, so we're talking about it. It's a murder mystery and a love story and a war story and beautiful nature writing. It's also a portrait of a fishing town. It's I think the remarkable thing about it is that it tells a story from several different points of view, and these beautiful descriptive passages are written from different points of view. So it's really just a beautiful book. Beautiful book. I also told my daughter Jessie that I would pass something on if you like fantasy literature, and in particular if you are interested in strong female characters. There's an author named Robin McKinley, and Jessie recommends in particular The Hero in the Crown. Susan gives it a thumbs up.
So, mine starts with a story. My sister and my mother were best friends, and they read lots of romances, like Georgette Heyer Regency romances, not ones with a lot of sex, but old ones. And I read one of those, and I was done. So they had this that they had in common, but I never joined them in their romance novels. But when my sister was dying of cancer, I went to her to visit her in the hospital, and she said, "I've got some books you have to read, though." And so she foisted them upon me, and that was in November, and she died, and then it took till May till I started reading these books. It was a trilogy at the time, now there's more. But the first one, I started reading, and it's a romance, and it's the first book is titled Outlander, and I was reading this, and I thought, this is really good, and I so wanted to be able to tell her, "You were right this time, this is really good." Now, she's continued writing all these, and they're not all that good, all the rest of them, but the first one named Outlander, the hero is just to die for. I mean, he's so, he's got all the traits that you want in a man. And so it brings up escapist reading. Plus, I was surprised at my sister. There's some sex in there.
Oh, yes.
And it's hard to write a good sex scene. You know, they're often very trite. She's good at it. She's very good at it. So I recommend Outlander from my sister.
Being made into a TV series, by the way.
Diana Gabaldon.
Being made into a TV series, by
I know, and I've seen pictures of the guy, and it's not mine.
It's always a danger.
I'm going to recommend The Speckled Monster, a historical tale of battling smallpox. It is based on two actual historical characters, and basically what they did is in the 1700s, where they didn't even have needles, so each of these characters, one in Boston, one in London, found out about a technique used first in Turkey, but also the Africans in Boston were doing it, where they would just slice open the arm, stick the smallpox in it. It's sort of the precursor of vaccination. And you know, if you put too much in, they probably would end up getting sick and dying of it. If you put too little in, it wouldn't take effect. That sort of thing. And well, you know, they faced all sorts of things, mobs, et cetera, et cetera. And she's got, at the end of the book, she's got like 20, 30 pages where she details where she was embellishing the characters and that sort of thing, and what they actually had in the history books. So if you're interested in after that, you can figure out what the history was by checking that out. And I just loved it. I'm recommending it to everybody. Author Jennifer Lee Carroll.
with the person having two victims.
To read in bed is to draw around us invisible, noiseless curtains. Then at last, we are in a room of our own and are ready to burrow back to that private life of the imagination we all led as children, and to whose secret satisfactions so many of us have mislaid the key. On the back cover of A Passion for Books.
I wasn't going to get up because I can't remember the name of the author, but I see that I'm not alone. So. The book I have to recommend, it may not be for everyone, but it's an absorbing book that really surprised me because it was one of those books that was recommended from someone, one of my friends, and he had he's actually mentioned in the book, and it was a friend of his wrote the book, so I didn't expect anything of it. And it's about the experiences of an American who was a soldier in Vietnam. And my friend is a Vietnam veteran who was over there. It's called Xinloy, X-I-N-L-O-I. And the reason why, it's just written so well, which, you know, being the first-person account of war experience, I had no expectations, but I couldn't stop reading it. And if you wonder what your friend or your father or some kid who you used to know, what happened to them when they went over there, this really lets you know. It's very powerful. And also, you get an idea of why people have so many problems when they come back.
How do you spell that?
X-I-N-L-O-I. And you can get it on Amazon.
Xinloy, Vietnam, 31 Months of War, A Soldier's Memoir by Al Sever, A-L-S-E-V-E-R.
Al Sever, yeah.
S-E-V-E-R.
S-E-V-E-R, yeah.
So I just kind of thought of this while people were talking, so I'm not too prepared. Although I actually have a funny or sort of hopefully slightly interesting note relating to In the Garden of the Beast, which I haven't read but I mean to. But I was talking about that book with a friend of mine, and she said, "Oh, there's someone in town whose grandfather was a minor character in that book," and it turns out that this guy. His family owned the house that the American ambassador was housed in, and so apparently his grandfather was a little kid and is mentioned slightly in the book. But anyhow, the book I was thinking of is called, if I remember correctly, Return from Berlin, and it's by a man named Robert Grilley. And the reason I knew about it, it's kind of a good summary, it's not very long, and it's sort of easy to read, but anyhow, Robert Grilley was an artist, and for a long time he was an art professor at UW. He's no longer alive, but he was my wife's favorite instructor when she got her art degree. And so kind of because of that, I read his book because I wanted to find out his experience. And so anyhow, he was a B-17 navigator in World War II based in Britain. And so the book talks a little bit about his background, and then most of the book is his experience in England during the war. It was sort of interesting because he would describe, you know, a combat mission, and then like the next day, if they didn't have a mission, he would go out and do sketches in the English countryside or something. But it's sort of, you know, makes you realize in that sort of situation how fine the line is between life and death, because he described that one mission, he had sort of his normal navigator station, and at some point he was doing something special that he wasn't in his usual position, and then at that point some piece of flak like blasted right through the plane where he normally would have been standing, you know, if he was at his navigator position. So it was kind of an interesting contrast of the combat and going out and painting in the quiet English countryside.
I came late, so maybe somebody already said this, because I love this book. It's If You Lived Here, I Know Your Name, News from Small Town Alaska, by Heather Lind, and she's wonderful. She writes a column for the little local paper there, so she kind of put a lot of columns together with more comments, and it's just wonderful. It's all about community and taking care of each other.
I came completely unprepared, but it's my memory's faulty, so please get on your phone. I'm afraid.
Stand by.
I'm afraid of yet, so I have to lean on somebody else. I just want to put in a pitch for a wonderful local author. I'm a huge mystery, I love mysteries. And there's a local guy who teaches at MITC named John Galligan. If you guys haven't read him, you must start. He is phenomenal. He lives over on the east side. I've been to some of his book signings, and he's totally approachable and wonderful. But his writing is fabulous. He writes about a fly fisherman, I kid you not. And I think the first one is set in Black Earth. I used to live near there, so I saw the Black Earth water. That rings true for me. But he also sets a couple of his later books in Montana. But the same character follows through, and it's quite, I mean, they're delightful, they're gorgeously written. You feel like you're in, standing hip deep in the waiters in the street with him. But it's also a fun mystery. But he also touches some pretty heavy subjects, which are very well handled. I would suggest you start with the first one and follow him through. And just give me one name.
The Wind Knot.
Wind Knot. There you go. They're all about the types of flies that you tie for fly fishing. Those are the time ones.
And Red Dragonfly.
Oh yes, and he has a different series. He has a heavy Japanese influence. He lived in Japan for a while, so there's one book about Japan, but his fly fishing ones, thumbs up.
Well, I'm going to tell you about a book which I didn't read, but I listened to. Thanks to Rose, who found this on a CD at the library, and to my daughter, who bought me a wonderful little radio, which plays these things, among other things. And it's a book by Wallace Stegner, who has written a lot of books. He's a Westerner, actually lives in Palo Alto area. I'm used to that. He's a funny guy. He's a very good writer. And this is a book called The Big Rock Candy Mountain. How many people know the book? So it's about two people who grew up in kind of Midwest, Illinois, Minnesota area, and both had very bad childhoods. Their parents were awful, and they both ran away from home, basically, and they ended up marrying each other. And they had a very exciting, often miserable marriage. but I highly recommend it. It's a long book. They one of the great parts of it, kind of the middle parts, is when they owned a little ranch in Saskatchewan, but their property included the boundary with the two states in the United States, with Montana, and I forgot the other state. And it's sort of fascinating, and it's, so if they traveled just a little bit on their property, just a few hundred acres, they crossed the line. So this was back in the late 1800s, and nobody paid much attention to where the international boundary for it.
Well, I hadn't actually planned to say anything, but I've been inspired by everybody else. If we're talking about summer reads, and to me that's kind of light, you know, reading. I like mysteries a lot too, and there's an author who I cannot remember the name of all the books by her I have read, but or the name of the main character. But the author's name is Nevada Barr, and she writes a series about. She has written a series about a woman who is a park ranger for the National Park Service.
And a pigeon, right.
In the character. And Anna is a ranger for the Park Service, and very conveniently for each book, she has been transferred to a different national park. And I can't remember the names of all the books I've read, but the very first one that I read was called A Superior Death. Mm-hmm. And Anna she's a park ranger at the Lake Superior National Seashore, and she's investigating a death on a boat that is supposedly accidental, but it isn't. So they're really well done, and they're a great summary.
Have we come to the end? Well, I want to thank everybody for sharing all those books. And be sure that you fill out one of the index cards. Susan has them, I have some. And Bob Park has volunteered to create a list, which will then be available for all of us so we can see what you talked about and have a chance to read them ourselves. That was wonderful. And I guess now we're going to the offering.
We are, but I can't help this. I don't usually do this. I've heard Amazon.com mentioned twice, and I just want to put in a plug for local bookstores. They do exist, they're wonderful, and they'll get anything for you.
Yeah. Can I just say that Frugal Muse orders new books
yes.
for 5% off.
Frugal Muse orders new books for 5% off, or anyone's own, or anything, and get them anything.
Thank you.
And the quote cards to God Park.
Well,